Morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is daf lamed. We are on Chavtes Amud Beis. We are starting towards the bottom of the Amud. We're going to be starting today with the words Amar of Ada Bar Ava. We're talking about an admission made by a loveh, the borrower borrowed money, and he is admitting to the loan. And under certain circumstances, that admission can be actually concretized and written down as a shtar. That is obviously going to serve as a disadvantage to the borrower. The borrower at this point in time only had a milveh alpeh. He only had an oral loan. An oral loan is does not have any lien on his property. There is not going to be any encumbrance created by as a result of this oral loan. And on top of that also, he could just simply say that he paid back the loan and that would be sufficient. But once he made an admission, and once it's a formal admission, and yesterday we talked about the parameters of what exactly is a formal admission, so then this admission can actually be concretized and written into a document. Yesterday, the Gemara spent some time discussing what exactly are the context and the parameters in which the admission is going to have enough legal significance where it can actually be written down. The Gemara is going to be continuing along this line of discussion. We are starting now on Chavtes Amud Beis, and we are beginning with the words Amar of Ada Ba'ava. Now, the truth of the matter is we did this part just at the end of yesterday's shir, but I'm reviewing, and this segues into the new material. Amar of Ada Ba'ava, Ha'udisa, so when we're talking about an admission, and specifically whether or not we should be writing it as a note, Zimnun Kasvin, V'Zimnun Kasvin. So sometimes it is to be written, and sometimes it is not to be written. So if the three are already sitting there, meaning you have three people, but they're already sitting there, and they were not convened for the purposes of the admission, so then we're not going to write down the note, because the basin was not convened specifically for the purposes of forming a basin and making this a formal admission. However, but if the loveh himself gathered the three people to make the formal admission, kasvina, so then we're going to write it down. Because according to this opinion, meaning Rav Ada Ba'ava, as long as the loveh convenes the three people together to make the admission, that's going to create now enough of a legal basis and a basin so that now this admission can be concretized and written down as a note. Rav Amar Afilu Kanfinu Ilo Kasvina Adamalu Ahavu Alai Dayani. Rava says that's not sufficient. For Rava, in order for the note to be written down based on the admission, he needs to A, convene together the Beis Din, and B, designate them as the Beis Din. Mar Bar Rav Ashi Amar, the Gemara quotes a third opinion, and that of Mar Bar Rav Ashi Afil Amar Havu Alai Dayani. Even with a designation, Lo Kasvinan Ad Kviya Duchte. So Mar Bar Rav Ashi adds a third component in terms of whether or not the admission can be written down, and that is that there has to be a Kviya. There has to be that basin is basically seated. There has to be an establishment of the place of Beis Din. V'shachem mezamnu leila Beis Dina. And from the place where Beis Din is now convening, where it was established, from there they have to send a summons in order to summon the lover, in order so that he make admission, so that this is basically going to be an initiation of Beis Din in order to have an admission done in front of the Beis Din. Then and only then is this admission going to be a legal basis for writing the admission down into a note. Now the Gemara continues. Let's say there was an admission regarding metaltel. And metaltel means movables. In this context of the Gemara over here, probably it means a loan, meaning money. So if there's an admission of metaltel v'kanamiyado, and there was a kinyan that was done afterwards, meaning probably kinyan seder kosvin, v'im lavin kosvin. So under these circumstances, this creates now enough of a formal legal basis where the admission can be turned into a note. V'im lavin kosvin, otherwise it cannot be written down. B'mekarke v'lo kanamiyado. Now when it comes to karka, even though it was not, a kinyan was not done, what would be the halacha? Amemar and Kosvin, and Marzutra and Marcosvin. So the Gemara brings down a machlokus between Amemar and Marzutra as to whether or not by property it's a kinyan needs to be done in order for the admission to be written down. And Vilchus HaKosvin, and the Gemara says that the halacha is that even without a kinyan, we're still going to write it down. Why should it be different regarding land as opposed to metaltel? By metaltel, and the Gemara said that without any debate, that in order for the metaltel to be written down, there has to be a kinyan that's done. But when it comes to karka, no kinyan needs to be done. So if you take a look at Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi, Dibur HaMaschil, First, I'll read the Rashi Dibra Maskel Ben Mekarke. What exactly is the case? Karke Shaya Ruven Muchzek Bava Hodel Shimon Shaya Shalom. Shehi Shalom. So the cases where Ruven was holding onto a property and it was right now presumed to be Ruven's property, but Ruven then made the admission that the property didn't actually belong to him, it belonged to Shimon. Okay, that's the admission that he's making regarding property. So here, Rashi now is commenting on the Gemara's conclusion, which is Kosvin, that we're going to be writing it down. Now, we're going to be writing down his admission as a formal document, even though no kinyan was done. And again, we're just explaining right now what's the difference. So Rashi goes on to say, so once he made the admission, now it immediately goes to Shimon. Rashi says there's it's not lacking a collection. You see, because as opposed to when it comes to a loan, metaltlin, and as I mentioned before, metaltlin here probably means money, and Rashi certainly supports that because Rashi is using the terminology of milvelotzanitna, which is talking about money. You see, as it relates to money, when I lend somebody money, the expectation is that he's going to spend it. That's why I lent him the money. V'chol ba'amahu, and that at this point, from this point going forward, he owes me the money. But we are assuming that he no longer has the money. And obviously now that it's in a situation of milva peh, that's actually weaker from the lender standpoint than a milva bishtar. And the lova has, generally speaking, no interest in bumping up the obligation from a milva peh to a milva bishtar. So, unless we know for sure that he wants to convert it from a milva peh to a milva bishtar, and the only way we're going to know for sure is if he makes an admission with a kinyan. But when it comes to property, so again, there's no collection when it comes to property. The property is right here. Once I make the admission that the property belongs to Shimon, it immediately goes to Shimon. And therefore, there's no kinyan that needs to be done. Adkan, that's Rashi's explanation of the difference between Karka and Metaltan. We are continuing in the Gemara. We're on Chavtes Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. Ravina Eklo Damharia. The Gemara tells the following incident where Ravina goes to the town of Damharia. Amale Ravdimi Baravuna Mi Damharia La Ravina. Metaltan Vi Isnehu Be'enayhu. My. What would be the situation if, let's say, there was an admission of an obligation of a movable item, and it is right here in his hand. So in other words, on one hand, it's like what we said earlier, in other words, it's movables. On the other hand, it's like karka because it's right here right now, and it's, as far as the collection is concerned, we see that it's right here. So what would be the halacha? So amar leikim karka dami. So Rav Dimi's response is, well, it should be like karka. So Rav Ashi Amar came in the Mechaser Gubayin Alon, and Rav Ashi says no, since it's still lacking in a collection, meaning even though it's here, but you still have to take it away from him. In other words, unlike Karka, where Karka, there's nobody who is physically holding the Karka. Karka, by its very definition, by its very nature, is just sitting there. But when it comes to Metaltalin, it's not just sitting there, it's being held by somebody. So even if the Metaltalin is here, so to say, but still it's Mechaser Gubayin, it still needs a collection. And therefore, Even if it's here and he's admitting that he owes it, still, in order for this admission to be converted into a note, it has to be an admission with a king. Now, the Gemara here is very specific about a note of admission, where the following was not written into the note of admission. The borrower told us that we were designated to write it, kisvu, v'chismu, and sign it, v'havule, and give it to the lender. So in other words, in the note of admission itself, it does not mention that the borrower instructed us to write the note. Now, that's an omission, and that's a critical omission, meaning that is something that's normally written into the note of admission, that we were authorized to write it. And this was not written in the note. And question on the table is, if we have such an omission in the note of admission, so is that considered significant or not? Meaning, can we assume that that was stated, just not written down, or no? Is the omission going to be now basically a forfeiture and a failure of writing a successful note? Abai v'Rava Adami Tarvayu Hainu de Reish Lakish. Though Abai Rava thought about this question, they said, you know, it's really no different than what Reish Lakish taught us. Damar Reish Lakish Chazaka Ina Eidim Chos Memal Ashtar Alim Kein Nasigado. Look, when you have witnesses signing on the document, were they adults at the time? Well, we don't know, but we can assume that they were, meaning that everybody knows that in order to be part and parcel of a transaction, to be part of a kinyan, you have to be a gadol. And so therefore, there are certain basic assumptions that we can make when a kinyan occurs. Notably, that when you have two witnesses signing on the shtar, they're gedolim. That's an assumption that we can make. So the Gemara over here is saying that we could take the rule of Reish Lakish and we can apply it over here. Meaning, even though the note of admission didn't state clearly that the borrower authorized the writing of the note of admission, but if we're writing a note of admission and there are two witnesses who are signing the note of admission, so why don't we just simply safely assume that such an authorization was actually stated by the borrower? The Gemara says, "Masiyav l'rapapi b'item Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yoshua mi'ikam mididan lo yadina v'safer debei dina yad." So he says, "Wait one second. It's not fair to compare the halacha that we're talking about right now regarding a note of admission and something as basic as when Adam signed on a shtar, they have to be gedolim. Meaning that's something that everybody knows, and therefore it's a safe assumption that we can make. But over here, not everyone knows this halacha that on a shtar hoda'a, there has to be a statement in a clause in the shtar hoda'a that the lov himself has authorized the writing of the shtar hoda'a. This is something that not everyone knows. In fact, Rav Papi says that I don't even think Sofrim know about this halacha. So I don't think it's a safe assumption. I don't think it's fair to say that everybody knows it, and therefore we can assume that there was an authorization that actually took place. But then the Gemara points out, Shanu l'safer d'abai v'yadei, and l'safer d'rav v'yadei. Now the whole crux of the question is based on the fact that he thinks that the Sofrim don't know this halacha. But then they did a quick spot check. They asked the Sofrim of Abai, they knew about this halacha. They asked the Sofrim of Rava, they knew about this halacha. So although he challenged the point, but it was built on a false premise. The Sofrim do in fact know the halacha that when you write a shtar hoda, a note of admission, so there has to be authorization as written as part of the clause of the document, and Sofrim do know it. And presumably the Gemara's conclusion is, although the Gemara doesn't make this point super clear, but seemingly the Gemara's conclusion is, since Sofer know it, so therefore we can say that it, just because it was left out of the shtar doesn't mean that there wasn't an authorization. You can assume that there was an authorization there. The Gemara now is quoting the language of another shtar hoda, and this is the language that was written into it. Durchum pizgame, v'chol lishe debe dinam. These words and all the languages that are normally used with in front of Beis Din. Now here's the problem. Problem is that who signed on this shtar hoda? So it said it was a Beis Din, but then there were only two people who signed on the signed at the end. Now that's obviously a problem. Since the beginning of the Masechta, we learned that a Beis Din is made up of three. And so we have now a shtar hoda that was admitted in front of a Beis Din. The problem here is a very simple problem. We only had two people signing on the bottom of the shtar. Now, generally speaking, we learned this back in Ksuvos, and Rashi here quotes the Gemara in Ksuvos as well. We learned back in Ksuvos that as long as there were three people there during the Dayanus, and at the time of the Gemara Ksuvos was talking about a henpik, was talking about basically notarizing a document, and the Gemara over there says that it has to be done in front of a Beis Din, and if the Beis Din was there and listened to the testimony of the witnesses who are notarizing the document, and it just happens to be that right before the signing, one of the Dayanim died. So the Gemara says over there, what you'll do is you'll simply write on the bottom of the notarization that really this was done in front of a Beis Din. The fact that there are only two signatures over here is because unfortunately one of the Dayanim died. So simply you write that information out on the notarization. So the Gemara over here is basically curious. It's more than a curiosity, but the Gemara here wants to know if, let's say, in the shtar hoda, it says that it was heard in front of a Beis Din, and then you had two signatures, but there was no clarification of what happened to the third dayan. Your two possibilities either there was no third dayan, which obviously is a problem, or there was a third dayan and he died. It just simply that information wasn't written out in the document. So, Savar Ravina Lameimar Hainu the Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, okay, so Ravina thought, okay, this is going back to the point of Reish Lakish. Even though this information was not written into the shtar, that there were really three Dayanim, but one of them died right before signing. So, but we can assume that that's in fact so. So Amalei Rav Nosson Bar Ami, Achi Aminu Mishmei Derava Kol Ki Agavna Chayshin LeBeis Din Toin. So the Gemara says, no. I'm worried that they actually... made a mistake over here, meaning that really it wasn't in front of a base, and it really wasn't done in front of three. It was really done in front of two, and I'm afraid that they made a mistake. So, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak I Kasav Ba Beidina Sulo Tzarach. Now, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that in such a document, if the word Beidin was written, so then we don't have to worry anymore, meaning we know that it was done in front of three, even though we only have two signatures. The Gemara says V'dilma Beis Din Chatzafu. Damer Shmuel Shneim Shadana Dinim Din Ela Shenikra Beis Din Chatzuf. The Gemara says, remember what we learned back in the beginning of the Masechta. Shmuel does allow for a basin of two to operate. He calls it a basin chatzuf. It's a basin that has chutzpah, but he does allow it to happen. So really, it could very well be that the admission was done in front of a basin that acted with chutzpah, in terms of that it was actually two, not three. So the Gemara says the Kasabe be didn't do Rabbana Ashi. So the Gemara says no, it doesn't just simply say basin on the document, it says Bezina de Rav Ashi. So Bezina de Rav Ashi, you assume that Rav Ashi's court knew that the halacha does not follow like Shmuel, and that we would never refer to a Beis Din as being two. Beis Din by definition means three. Either only two signatures on the document. Again, we'll have to assume that there was a third dying over there, but unfortunately he died before signing. And yes, again, they should have written that out on the document itself, but just because they left it out doesn't mean that that wasn't in fact the case. The Gemara says, well, maybe Rabbanan de Bei Rav Ashi do in fact agree to Shmuel that two would be as a Beis Din. Amalan Rabbana Ashi. So the Gemara says no. Rav Ashi instructed us to write down this note. So if this was instructed directly from Rav Ashi, we know that Rav Ashi would not allow for a basin of two. Even Shmuel said that it's a basin that is mechutzaf. It's a basin that acts arrogantly. And if Rav Ashi was commissioning the basin to write down this Shtar Hoda'a, he would only do so if there were three there. And again, the fact that there are two leads us to, we could safely assume that really there were three. It's just that one died before the actual signature. An Lamed Amen Aleph. Now we're continuing the Gemara. Tan Rabbanan Amar Lehem Echad. Ani Reizi Avichem Sheit Me Maos Beshita Tevo Megdal. Va'Amar Shal Plonihem or Shal Meister Hesheniheim. So, if a person says to another, "I saw your father take money and put it into a chest," and he said either it belongs to so-and-so, or he says that it belongs to Meister Sheni. So this person now, one aide, is just one witness, coming and testifying about certain monies that were hidden by the father, and is further testifying who he feels is the rightful owner of that money. So the Bryce over here makes a decision based on the following. Babayis, if the hiding place was located in the house, lo amar klum. So then this one witness has no credibility whatsoever. Besada, but if the hiding place was out in the field, varif kayamim, so then this one witness is going to have credibility. Klal shel davar, immediately the brayse explains itself. Kol shebiyado litlan, dvarif kayamim. Ein biyado litlan, lo amar klum. So the Gemara here introduces us to a topic which the Gemara in a number of places speaks about, and that is the idea of biyado. If something is within your control, you therefore are going to have full credibility of an item, even if you're one witness. Here, if the money was located out in the field, so that means that this guy who's testifying could have at any point in time just simply taken the money himself. This is what we would call in halacha biyado. It's within his control. And when he says something about it, therefore he's going to be believed. Kol shebiyado, as long as something is within your control, ne'eman. However, if it was in a place where he could not have taken it, meaning it was in the person's house, and let's assume that he's not a thief, so if it's in a place where he could not have taken it, so then it's considered eino biyado, and therefore, because he's only one witness, he's eino neman, he's not going to be believed. The brisa goes on. Let's discuss a case where dad hid money in a chest, va'amr shel plonihein. And this is a case where the sons themselves are testifying to this. And they say that dad said it belonged to so-and-so. Shal Meister Sheni Hain. Or it belongs to Meister Sheni. So, im kamoser. Now, here the Gemara makes the following split. If, when dad is imparting this information to the kids, it looks like dad is is trying to give over actual information to the kids, so then dvarv kayamim. So then we're going to believe that this money either belongs to whoever he designated as a recipient, or Maaser Sheni. Im Kimarim, however, if that did not look like he was trying to impart information, but he looked like he was being a little bit sarcastic, he looked like he was just being a little bit flippant, to be honest, it's not totally clear how to make this segregation between Kemoser versus Kemarim, but I'm just saying the Gemara Kipshuto. If he's looking like he is being a little bit deceptive in this information that he's given to his kids, Lo Amar Klum, so then it's as if he has said nothing. Rashi on Dibra Maskel Kemarim Shuhu Midyari Shelo Yitle Bechayav Oshu Yachziku Kaasher. So Rashi over here provides two reasons why, as long as he doesn't look serious about what he's saying right now, we can make two assumptions or two explanations of why it is that what he's saying is really not true. Rashi says, number one, because he doesn't want anyone to take it. Meaning, if he said that the money belonged to him, so someone's going to come along and take it. But if he says the money belongs to somebody else or to Maaser Sheni, so it'll be a... It's not going to prevent somebody from just simply taking it, but it will be more of a preventative measure so that somebody wouldn't come along and take it, knowing that it doesn't belong to the father himself. Or Rashi points out, shelo yachziku ka'asher lahosif al yitziyosav, or he just simply doesn't want to look wealthy. A argument that Gemara used just yesterday's daf, that people try to devalue how much money they actually have. And so, when Dad was saying, oh, this belongs to so-and-so or belongs to Maaser Sheni, it's just another way of Dad just simply saying, I'm not as wealthy as I look. But the truth of the matter is the money does, in fact, belong to him. The Brisa gives us now a third case. He was very upset and worried about money that was left to him by his father. And the following came to him in a dream. The Gemara has a very interesting way of describing it. It's Bal HaChalom. Rashi describes it as Sar HaMare Chalamosav Balayla. Right? The administrating angel in charge of dreams at night. But the following came to him in a dream. Kach V'kachain. So this is how much your father left you. B'makom plonia, and it's located in such and such a place. Shel Maaser Sheni hein. And you should know, however, that the money is not yours. It's actually Maaser Sheni's money. Zaya Maisa. So this actually occurred, meaning that based on the information provided to him in the dream, he found the money to the amount that was told to him by in the dream, and in the location that was told to him by in the dream. And now he wants to know. So far the dream is right on two of the three points. Maybe the dream is right also about the third point as well. Maybe it does in fact belong to Maaser Sheni. Va'amru. So this person took the question over to the Chachamim, and the Braisa concludes, Divrei Chalomos lo malam v'lo moreinim. And they, the Chachamim, said to him, look, it's a dream. So you cannot, we don't pass on the halacha based on the dream. Meaning, yes, of course, it is fortuitous that you found the money where the dream pointed you in that direction, but just because you were told in the dream that the money belongs to Maaser Sheni, that's not edus, that's not testimony, and you do not have to actually regard the money as being Maaser Sheni money. Adkan. We're at the two dots now, about a third of the way down in Lamed Amud Aleph, and we're continuing now in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is now talking about the verdict. Remember, the Mishnah in yesterday's daf told us the procedure of the actual court process. What is court procedure? So we talked about the admission of the witnesses, the examination of the witnesses. We talked about the deliberation, and now we're up to the point of the verdict. And the Mishnah tells us that basically we follow the majority. If two people say that he has to pay, then he has to pay. If two of the three say that he does not have to pay, he does not have to pay. And clearly, if there's a unanimous decision, we follow the unanimous decision. In the Mishnah, we said that in terms of how the verdict is going to be presented to the litigants, we just are going to say either guilty or innocent, right? You have to pay or you don't have to pay. And there is not only no need, but one should not, we learned back in the Mishnah, divulge who said what, which of the judges said what, and the Mishnah says it's really a problem of Lashon Hara. Michtav Heichi Kasvei. Now, what would be the situation in which now this is going to be put in writing. So now, in other words, we're going to take the verdict and we're going to put it in writing. It's not clear whether or not every verdict is going to be written down. It's not clear from the Gemara whether every verdict has to be written down, but what the Gemara now is discussing and entertaining is, if we're going to be putting this verdict down in writing, how exactly are we going to do so? So the Gemara now is going to present three opinions. Rav Yochanan Amar Zakkai. Rav Yochanan says just simply the conclusion. Reish Lakish Amar Ploni Ploni Mezakkai Ploni Ploni Mechayven. Reish Lakish says that we're going to write down the conclusion, but we're also going to write down every one of the opinions of the judges and what each judge said. And Rabbi Elazar Amar Midivrei Nizdake Ploni. And Rabbi Elazar says that what we're going to write down is that there was deliberation, and based on the deliberation of the judges, so they arrived at a conclusion of, again, either innocent or guilty, whatever the conclusion may be. So in the formulation of how we're going to write down the verdict, your options are either just the verdict with every vote that was cast by the three judges, or just simply a statement of there was deliberation and then the verdict. My Beinah, the Gemara wants to know, it's a very simple question, what is really at the core of the debate over here between these three Amorai? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of suggestions. Three suggestions. One, Ike Beinah Lushlame Iyum and Asabah Adai. So the Gemara says we're talking about a case where there was a majority rule, and the majority rule was perfectly erroneous. Under certain circumstances, when the judges rule erroneously, they're going to have to pay for the erroneous ruling. Now, we're going to talk about this later on in the couple days from now in the daf, in terms of when it's considered shikul hadas, when it's a bona fide mistake that they're going to have to make payment for. But for our purposes right now, let's just simply say that under certain circumstances, if it's gross error on the part of the judges, so they're going to have to pay for their erroneous ruling. So the Gemara says, "Lishlumi iu manasa ba'adayu." And the Gemara now wants to know, or what the Gemara is explaining is maybe at the core issue over here, as the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, in terms of whether or not when we write out the ruling, do we just simply write the verdict, or do we write everyone's opinion? The question becomes, the one who did not rule incorrectly, the one who was the minority but correct ruling, does he have to contribute to paying? And maybe what's at issue over here is maybe Rav Yochanan, who just simply says you write down the verdict, because in the event of an erroneous ruling, every judge, even the one who ruled correctly, even though he was a minority, every judge is going to have to pay and reimburse. And the one who says no, that we're going to have to write down the opinion of every judge and what they voted, is because only those who made gross error are going to have to pay, and the one who did not make a gross error is not going to have to pay. This is now the Gemara's suggestion in terms of what the machlokas is based on. So the Gemara says, "Laman damer zakam shalem leim lehu lididit zaysinon asanam lo shalamtin." So the Gemara says it's really difficult to understand, because let's think about what we just said on behalf of Rav Yochanan. We said that according to Rav Yochanan, once the Beis Din arrived at a ruling, so then everyone, and it was a gross error, everyone has to pay, even the judge who ruled correctly. Gemara asks a really simple and reasonable question. That judge who ruled correctly, why would he have to pay? He'll just turn around to the other two and say, I was right. I was trying to convince you that I was right. And if you would have listened to me, none of us would have to be paying right now. So how could we possibly make the argument that he who ruled correctly is going to have to pay for the mistake? He didn't make a mistake, and he was trying to convince the other judges that they should follow his opinion, as he is the correct ruling. So the Gemara says, okay, so you're right. So what we just offered as a suggestion that the Gemara says is really hard, it's difficult to suggest. So the Gemara is going to move on to another suggestion. So the Gemara says like this. Maybe you're right. The one judge who ruled correctly is not going to have to pay for the egregious error that was made. And the two who made the egregious error are in fact going to have to pay. Gemara says, but they're only representing two of the three judges. Are they going to have to pay two-thirds of the payment, or are they going to have to pay the full amount? The Gemara now is suggesting this is the subject of the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Lamanda mezakeh mishamei. If we are the one who says that we're just going to write down the verdict and nothing more than the verdict, So so that means that it's going to be those who ruled incorrectly are going to be responsible to pay the full amount of the damages that they incurred through their malpractice. And Lamand, Amar Pliny, Pliny, Mizakan, Pliny, Pliny, Mechayvin, Lamashami. However, the one who says that, we're going to spell out who said what, it's because what's going to end up happening in the event that there was a gross error is that the ones who made the gross error are going to have to pay, but they're only going to have to pay percentage-wise. Meaning, if two of the three judges ruled egregiously wrong, so then they're going to have to pay, but they're only going to have to pay two-thirds. And so, therefore, it's necessary to write down on the verdict who said what. In the event that there's going to have to be a payment, we're going to make the determination then of each person and how much they're going to have to pay. Again, the Gemara hears this, but the Gemara doesn't like this. And the Gemara, again, balks at this suggestion. So, the Gemara says, how could it possibly be that that the two judges are going to have to pay 100% of the damages? Meaning, can't they at least say to the one judge who, by the way, ruled correctly, but can't they at least say to him, look, had it not been for you, Bazin's ruling would never have been executed. Meaning, because you cast a vote, now again, you cast the right vote and we cast the wrong vote. We get that. But because you cast a vote, so now we came out with an official Bazin ruling. So on one hand, I understand that you don't have to pay for the damages because you didn't rule in that favor. But to expect us now to pay 100% of the damages, no, we're not going to be 100% of the damages. When, yes, it's true that we made a mistake. And yes, it's true that our mistake was egregious. But without you, it wouldn't have been a ruling. So at least excuse us from having to pay the one-third that you were responsible for, in that without your vote, we wouldn't have had a ruling. So the Gemara says, okay, Eliyika Beinayim. So the Gemara says, okay. So over here, let's assume now that the issue over here is not malpractice. It's not who's paying. In the event of malpractice, the Gemara gives now a totally different explanation of the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And oh, by the way, there was a third opinion, which even in our discussion up until now, we didn't even consider the third opinion and how he's going to fit in all this. Eliyika Beinayim, so the Gemara now is going to be giving a third explanation, a new approach, and this will be the accepted one. Mishum de lo selech recha ba'amecha. The Torah says that you're not allowed to be a gossip monger. Rav Yochanan Amar Zakai, Mishum lo selech recha. Rav Yochanan says, we're not going to write down who said which opinion, because if we were to write down who said which opinion, obviously that's immediately going to create animosity between the judges and the litigants, because there are two litigants. Clearly, a judge is going to be siding with one of the two litigants. Whatever vote is cast, each judge is going to be signing with one litigant and going against another litigant. So if you write down who said what, that immediately is going to create animosity between judges and the opposing litigant. So Rav Yochanan says, so don't do it. Don't write down who said what, just simply write down the verdict of the Beis Din. Now, of course, the one who loses is going to walk away not so excited about the Beis Din, but at least he can entertain the possibility that one of the judges actually ruled in his favor, and because he doesn't know which one, so it could be any one of the three. It will reduce the animosity between them. On the other hand, Reish Lakish says, you know what I value? I value full disclosure. Meaning, if you were to write just simply a verdict and you didn't state who said what, it could come out that what we're looking at over here is perhaps a unanimous ruling. And that wasn't necessarily the case. For the purposes of truth and full disclosure, so therefore it's important to write down who said what. So for Reish Lakish, the value, the dominating value is going to be that of full disclosure. And finally, the Gemara says Rav Elazar. Now, what's Rav Elazar's position? So he's going to actually take a middle ground, Islay Damar v'Islay Damar, meaning he values Lashon Hara. And by the way, when I say he values Lashon Hara, Reish Lakish also values Lashon Hara. And Rav Yochanan also values full disclosure. It's just a question of when you have competing values one against the other, so which one is going to take precedence? So Rav Yochanan says Lashon Hara is going to take precedence. Reish Lakish says full disclosure is going to take precedence, and Rav Elazar is going to try to create a middle position where we can take into consideration both values. And how are we going to do that? Hilcha kasehachi. Therefore, what you write is midivrei nizdakaploni, meaning that there was deliberation. And by saying midivreihem, so basically that gives the impression now that there was not a unanimous viewpoint, but rather the dayanim argued over this issue, and maybe they didn't all agree to this issue. So now you have hopefully properly communicated the idea that this was a contested issue and there was an agreement, but obviously amongst the three judges obviously there was a majority. So you've taken care of full disclosure. Of course, let's admit it's not full disclosure, but at least it's more information. And at the same time, by not revealing and divulging who said what, so we are also protecting and valuing the issue of Lashon Hara. Continuing in the Gemara. So the Gemara says that when the matter comes to a conclusion, so they would bring him in. Bring him in. Laman. Gemara's question over here is a really simple question. Who are we bringing in? So the Gemara says, let's assume that the litigants were there. Now, in this assumption that the litigants were there, by the way, let's also comment that that means that the litigants were there for deliberation. Okay, so in a way that's good, meaning we just spoke about full disclosure. If the litigants are there for deliberation, they are present for full disclosure. Although what the Gemara previously wanted to suggest was that let's not say who said what of the judges for fear of Lashon Hara and animosity. If the litigants were there for deliberation, honestly, the litigants would have a pretty good idea of which judge said what. So, admittedly, at this point of the Gemara, where the Gemara is entertaining the idea that the litigants are there for deliberation, it kind of goes against the Gemara that we just learned together. Okay, it's something to think about. So, but the Gemara says, but right now the Gemara is assuming the litigants are there. So who are we bringing back in? So the Gemara says, Ella Leidim, and we're bringing the witnesses back in. Now that's, of course, very strange, because we're bringing the witnesses back in. They testified already. Remember, in the beginning of the Mishnah, we talked about how we did examination of each of the witnesses individually. In fact, we want to examine them individually, because we don't want them to hear the other testimony. We want to see if their testimonies actually align and coordinate with one another. So why are we bringing the witnesses back in? So now the Gemara is going to explain. Come on, the local Rabbi Nelson. So our Mishnah is not subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Nelson. The time the Gemara is going to quote the Brice. Now the Brice over here is going to bring down two machloksim. Just to be clear, right? Look at the Brice in a very organized fashion. There are actually two debates occurring in this Brice. The first one is not the one we're focusing on for now. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. Well, we're going to read the Brice in its entirety. In order for two witnesses to be two valid witnesses, they have to see the same event together. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha Amar Afilu B'Zachar Zeh. And Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha says that they do not have to see the same event at the same time. They could see the event at two different times. Now, I know right now as I say it, it's really hard to conceive a situation in which witnesses are testifying to an event that they did not see at the same time. If they did not see the event at the same time, they're not testifying to the same event. I know that's difficult. We're going to come back to that in just a little bit. In the meantime, however, we want right now to focus on the second machlokus. There is another debate that exists between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Nosson, and that is at the point of testimony. When witnesses testify, you need two witnesses to testify. Can they testify at separate times, or do they have to testify together? The position of the Tanakhama is that they must testify together, almost like as if to say in unison. And Rabbi Nosson says, no, you can hear testimony of one witness today, and you can hear testimony from the other witness tomorrow. And they do not have to be heard at the same time. So what the Gemara now is entertaining is the following. When the Mishnah says we're going to bring the witnesses back in, do you know why? So what the Gemara now is suggesting is because we subscribe to the viewpoint of the Tanakhama of Rabbi Nosson, meaning the one who argues with Rabbi Nosson. And he says that in order for testimony to be admissible in court, the two witnesses have to come and testify at the same time. Now, even according to the Tanakhama, it's hard to imagine that there needs to be actually testimony in unison. At the same time just simply means that they're both present. One will say it, and then right after he finishes it, let's even suggest tochedei dibur, the other witness has to start. But in other words, it has to be coming at the same time. And that's why, says the Gemara, the witnesses have to come in afterwards, even though we already know what the witnesses said. Remember, the Mishnah already talked about the examination of each witness individually. But that's good. That just simply gets us to the point where we know that the witnesses are corroborated one with the other. But in order for it to be now formal testimony, it must be that the witnesses are coming in at the same time. This is what the Gemara is suggesting is pshat in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, no, let's not say that. Let's say that as far as the witnesses are concerned, they did their job. They submit their testimony. They don't have to come in and testify at the same time. And really, who we're reintroducing back into the court is a litigant, Labali Dinim. Reb Nechemi, and the Gemara says, and this subscribes to the viewpoint of Reb Nechemi, the Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Bryce, Reb Nechemi Omer, Kachayim Nagam Shonikiyah Hadas Shibushalim. This is the Minog of Nikiyah Hadas. Second time in the third paragraph that we mentioned Nikiyah Hadas. We mentioned it on the first daf of the first daf of the third paragraph of Sanhedrin, back on Chav Gimel. We talked about how Nikiyah Hadas in Yerushalayim wouldn't sit in litigation, wouldn't be signing on a document, wouldn't be eating at a seud unless they knew who else was with them. The Gemara over here is continuing telling us other practices of Nikiyah Hadas in Yerushalayim. Machnis and Labali Dim Vishom and Devrayim. They would bring in the litigants. They would listen to the tainas of each of the litigants. Umachnis and Sayyidim Vishom and Devrayim. They would then bring in the witnesses in order to hear the testimony of the witnesses. Umotzian Osan Lachus. And then everyone would leave the courtroom and it would be closed door deliberation. Venosim Venosim Medavra, and they would discuss the matter not in front of the witnesses, not in front of the Dayanim. And then afterwards they would bring everyone back in. The Gemara quotes the Brisa, Gamrus Adavar. Now the Brisa says that after the matter comes to a conclusion, Machnis Nemesaidim, we bring back in the Aidim. Now clearly this Brisa we just quoted is not in agreement with what we just said. We just got done saying that the people that are reintroduced are the litigants. The Brisa we just quoted says the witnesses are going to be reintroduced. So Haina Deloka Rabbi Nassim. The Gemara says, fine, that Brisa is not going like Rabbi Nassim. Fine. But in other words, in terms of our Mishnah, we could say that the Pshat in our Mishnah is in fact going like Rabbi Nassim. The witnesses do not need to be giving testimony at the same time together. Each of the witnesses submitting testimony individually is fine. The people that we're reintroducing back into the courtroom are the litigants, because it's going to be closed door deliberation. Continuing in the Gemara, Gufa. We're going to go back now to the first machlokas in that braisa, the one I said was not the part that we should be focusing on, but now of course we're going to be focusing on it, as the Gemara itself now turns its attention to the first machlokas in the braisa. We are now discussing whether or not witnesses need to be seeing the event at the same time. Okay, let's start off with a point that's really obvious. If we're talking about like a crime, like a murder, And one witness says that the murder took place on Sunday, the other witness says, no, the murder took place on Monday. There's no way, even though both witnesses are testifying to a murder, there's no way that we're going to sync together these two testimonies if they can't agree on the day. Okay, so, and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha and the Chachamim are not going to be arguing about such a scenario. However, what they are going to be arguing about is a civil case, and specifically when somebody owes somebody either money or property. And what Rabbi Yeshua Makarcha and the Chachamim are arguing about is the following. Let's say that the two witnesses are coming into court and both testifying about an obligation, but they are disparate in terms of which days they say the obligation actually occurred. So here the Gemara now is going to try to explain to us the machlokes between Rav Yishuv Makarach and the Chachamim on this particular issue. The Gemara says, "B'maikem iflagi ibayzeh makra ibayzeh masfar." So the Gemara says, "I can explain it. I can try to explain the machlokes either rationally or based on drasha." The Gemara starts off with a rational explanation. Ibayzeh masfar. Aman de kamasid high lo kamasid high. Aman de kamasid high lo kamasid high. So first of all, let's explain the Tanakhama. If the two witnesses are coming and testifying about an obligation, and they even agree to the amount, Reuven owes $100 to Shimon, right? The first witness says, I saw Reuven lend the money on Sunday. The second witness says, yeah, I saw Reuven lend the money on Monday. So the Tanakhama's viewpoint, which is super reasonable, is Yeah, but they didn't see it on the same day. And because they didn't see it on the same day, so they're not testifying about the same event. Fine. And the idach. Now, as far as Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha is concerned, Amana ba'ama tarvayu kemesante. So Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha says, well, let's look at the common denominator. We have two witnesses testifying about an obligation that Reuven owes Shimon money. Granted, it's not on the same day, but let's. I know it's hard to present this, but let's just ignore the day and let's just look at the common denominator. There is an obligation. It is, they agree to the amount. Reuven owes Shimon money, and they're both agreeing to that. And so therefore, we could take their testimonies and put them together. Now, I understand. It's difficult. It's difficult to ignore the fact that it was on different days. But right now, let us propose that for Rabbi Yehoshua Ben Karcha, that's not going to be a deal breaker. Ebay same akra, the Gemara says, or we can explain this based on Pesukim. Where the Torah introduces us to the idea of Edus, and the Torah tells us at the end of Parshas Vayikra that when a person has testimony, he is not to suppress his testimony. And the Tanya will learn from the Braisa, why? When saying the word aid is a singular, which means that it should by definition mean one witness, but as we're going to learn together, it doesn't mean one witness. Actually, the word aid means two witnesses. So, and if you look in the end of Parsha Shoftim, the Torah says lo yakum aid echad biish. Meaning the word echad is superfluous. Why would the Torah need to say the word echad? That's exactly what the Brice here is coming to explain. So lo yakum aid any odeshu echad matam lomer echad zebanava benaav. So what we have over here is now a precedent created. Komakum shenemar aid arei kashnayim. Which means that the default setting of the Torah is that when the Torah uses the word aid, it actually means two. Achi part lecha katzav echad. Unless the Torah goes out of its way to say echad, which means that's the exception to the rule. But the rule is that the word aid is referring to two witnesses. Now, the Afkir Rabbanan B'lashon Chad LaMeimar, and so let's ask a really simple question and give a powerful answer. Why would the Torah describe two witnesses as aid in the singular? That's the question, and the Gemara's answer is, I'll tell you why. Because Ad Avatar V'Kachad. Because in order for two witnesses to be considered a group, a kat, a group testifying, that means that they have to see the same event at the same time. That's the opinion of the Tanakama. V'idach, and as far as the opinion of Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha is concerned, v'hu eid o ra'a o yada mikom akom. The Torah, when describing the witness, says he saw it or he knew it. So in other words, the Torah is more general with the idea that as long as the witnesses are providing the same basic information, so then we can accept the two witnesses even if they didn't necessarily see it at the same time. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. Ein edusim miskayim as bevesin ad shi'aydu shneim ke'echad. Rabbi Nelson Omer shomim dvarav shalzeh hayom u'kishyavu chaver lamach shomim dvarav. This is the second part of the Braisa, which we already discussed, but the Gemara now is going to do the same thing, and that is explain the machloks between the Tanakam and Rabbi Nelson, either using Svara or using Psukim. The Gemara does this right now. So the Gemara tries to suggest this as a Svara. When you have one aid, so one aid only has the power to induce a Shvua. But one aid does not have the power to make a person owe money. And so therefore, in order for aidim to come and to extract money from one from the other, the two aidim have to come together. That's the svara of the Tanakhama. The Idach and Rabbi Nassim will tell you, no. I don't understand. When the two coming together, is there going to be like a duet? Are they gonna speak in unison? No. Elam and Starf and Lahu. What we do is that we take the aidus of one and we put it together with the aidus of two. What difference does it make if they are back to back, or if they're a day apart, or if they're 2 days apart? And Rabbi Nelson says, look, we're anyway going to have to combine the two testimonies, so it really shouldn't make a difference whether we're combining it one right after the other, or they are testifying a day apart. Ebay same akra, the Gemara says, or we could base the machlokus on drasha. Im lo yagid v'nasa avono. Torah describes that if a person suppresses his testimony, so he's going to have to be liable, he's going to be responsible for the fact that he suppressed testimony. Udekule Alma, now the Gemara is suggesting over here, Karabana, we're on the very top of Lamed Amud Beis. Karabana de Pligala de Rav Yeshua Mekarcha. That on the previous machlokas, well, let's assume right now, it is an assumption, that right that both Tanakama and Rabbi Nassan agree to the Tanakama against Rabbi Yeshua Makarcha, that in order for witnesses to properly testify about an event, they have to see the same event at the same time. And over here now, the question is whether or not there's a hekesh between the witnessing of the event and the testifying of the event. And the question is whether or not there's a hekesh between the seeing, which again the government now is assuming everyone agrees that the event has to be seen by the two witnesses together, and if you subscribe to a hekesh, so that means that the witnesses also have to testify to the event together. And if you don't subscribe to the hekesh, so then they don't have to testify together. So that is how we can explain the machlokas ayidei derech hadrush. Gemara discusses now whether or not the halacha falls like the Chachamim or Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, but it does so in the venue of a maisa. Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim have a mishtaket alad Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina lemismechei v'lo kamistayim osa. Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim was trying to give smicha to Rabbi Chanina. To Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, but just simply wasn't having success. So it's not the first time in this Masechta we saw there was an attempt to give smicha, and for reasons which the Gemara does not articulate, he just it wasn't working out. But Yom Echad Havi Yosef came to Rabbi Yochanan, but there was a day once where they were in front of Rabbi Yochanan and Amar Lahu, Mi'ika Diyad de Halach Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha Ula. So is Halacha Fala Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha Ula? This is the question that Rabbi Yochanan was posing to the students. Amar Lei Rabbi Yeshua Ben Eliakim Dein Yadav. Rabbi Yeshua Ben Eliakim points now to Rabbi Yossi, and he says, oh, this one knows. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Yochanan says, excited, Lei Me'izu. So he turns to Rabbi Yossi, and he says, okay, let me hear it. Okay, say it. So Amar Lei Lusmechem Arbereisha. So Rabbi Yeshua Ben Eliakim stops Rabbi Yochanan and says, wait 1 second. Before he gives you the answer, I'd like you to give him smicha. Now, again, there obviously is more dynamics going on over here in terms of why Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim himself didn't give the smicha, why Rabbi Yochanan was the one who necessarily had to give the smicha, and I'm admitting that I don't understand all the dynamics involved in why it is that only Rabbi Yochanan could be giving the smicha, but again, clearly that was the case. And so Rabbi Shimon is now using this as an opportunity to basically have Rabbi Yochanan confer smicha onto Rabbi Yossi. So, samche. So Rabbi Yochanan did it, and it worked. So Amar Lei, now Rabbi Yochanan says to the new musmach, B'ni Amar Lei Ketzah Shemata. Okay, good, let me hear what the halach is. Amar Lei, so he says to him, Kach Shemati, Shemod Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha L'Rabbi Nassan. So he says, look, I know that Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha agrees to Rabbi Nassan. Now, what is the new musmach saying? So what the new musmach is saying is as follows. Look, we just learned together there were two machloksim. Do you have to see the event at the same time? Again, machlok is between the Tanakam and Rabbi Nassan. Do you have to testify about the event at the same time? Machlok is between Tanakam and Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha. So what this new musmach was arguing is the following. Well, we know the halacha is like Rabbi Nassan, that when testifying to the event, you don't have to testify at the same time. Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha now is saying, well, I agree to Rabbi Nassan, meaning that if you don't have to testify to the event at the same time, so that also means that you don't have to see the event at the same time as well. And if we know that the halacha falls like Rabbi Nassan, so then it wouldn't be such a stretch to then suggest that the halacha falls like Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha. This is the argument of the new musmach that he said in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Amar, so Rabbi Yochanan, when hearing this argument, he says, really? Lezehu tzrachtani? I needed to give smicha in order to hear that. Come on. If Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha doesn't need the event to be seen at the same time, of course he's not going to require the testimony to be given at the same time as well. But that's not what I'm asking. Meaning, I know what Rabbi Yeshua Mekarcha says regarding the testimony, and then I know that he's going to agree to Rabbi Nassan. But that's not what I'm asking. I'm going in the other direction. Meaning, I'll give it to you that the halacha falls like Rabbi Nassan, and I know that the testimony does not have to be given at the same time. But does the event have to be seen at the same time? I know Rabbi Yeshua ben Karach agrees with Rabbi Nassan. What I don't know, and what I'm asking, is would Rabbi Nassan necessarily agree with Rabbi Yeshua ben Karach? And you didn't address that point. Now Amar Lei. Now even though Rabbi Yochanan was not impressed with the first argument that was given by this new musmach, but Amar Lei Hol Valisa Lo Seirid. But look, I gave you smicha, and once I gave you smicha, that's it. You don't go down. Meaning you're now a musmach, and just because you didn't give me the answer that really pleased me or satisfied me, doesn't mean that I'm going to be rescinding your smicha. Amar Rabbi Zera Shmamina. Rabbi Zera says Gavur Abba Kevan Di Istamich. Now, in the Gemara, we have the word kevan de samich. But if you take a look at the side of the Gemara, so some have corrected to istamich. Now, that makes a big difference, by the way, because it's a focus over here on the one who gives the smicha or the one who receives the smicha. But assuming it's istamich. So he says, Gavad Rabba kevan de samich. When you have a great person who receives smicha, samich, so at that point in time, he receives smicha. And even though it may have looked conditional, nevertheless, though, it's not to be rescinded. excuse me. We have two machlokesim that we just learned together. The machlokes of Rabbi Nassan and the Tanakhama in terms of whether or not the testimony has to be submitted in the court at the same time, or it can be given at two different times. Tanakhama says same time, Rabbi Nassan says two different times. And Gemara has not said this super clearly, but the halacha falls like Rabbi Nassan. That was an assumption that the Gemara made previously. There's another machlokus, which, again, was already covered a couple times today, but now we're going to be discussing it more in depth, and that is whether or not the witnesses need to see the event at the same time. Now, again, we're limiting our discussion over here to monetary obligation. We're not talking about a crime. And in this, now, does a monetary obligation need to be seen by the two witnesses at the same time? Rav Yishuv Mekarcha says it does not need to be seen at the same time. And the Tanakhama says no, it needs to be seen at the same time. Now, again, we're trying to wrap our heads around around the opinion of Rav Yishuv Mekarcha, because admittedly it is a difficult position to understand. So the Gemara is going to discuss this in more detail. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Amar Rav. Halach ki Rav Yishuv Mekarcha bein bekarkos bein bemetatlan. So Rav paskins that halach falls like Rav Yishuv Mekarcha, whether it comes to karka or whether it comes to metatlan. Okay. Now when it comes to karka, so let's think this through. When it comes to karka, so let's say one witness says that in front of me, this person admitted that the land belongs to so-and-so. And then the next day, another witness also, heard the same person say, oh, you know, I owe this land to so-and-so. So actually, now that we're looking at it in terms of karka, actually, it makes a lot of sense. Meaning, Even though the witnesses heard this on two different days, but it's talking about the same property. Meaning, now, and put in this context, and actually, Rav Yishuv Mekarcha's position sounds pretty reasonable. Meaning, one witness says that I heard the admission on Sunday, a second witness says I heard an admission on Monday, and they both could be telling the absolute truth, meaning they're both correct. And now, Rav Yishuv Mekarcha says I can take the two testimonies, simply put them together, and good. And now we can go forward. Now it's going to get a little bit trickier. Rav says it's also going to be true by Metatlin as well. Take a look at Rashi, four lines down. Four lines down from the top. Rashi writes, Bema Metatlin, Zelmer Bifane Hilval Manu, Vizelmer Bifane Hilval Manu, Valfapida, Manaka Masid, Hai, Lamasid, Hai, Mikomakom Tavai Masid, Shechayev Lamana. You see, by Metatlin, and again, Metatlin over here, let's assume he's alone. Rashi assumes it, so we can assume it. So the but now Rav says the halacha falls like Rav Yishuv Mekarcha even by alone, and obviously this represents a bigger chiddush, because one witness is saying that the loan occurred on Sunday, another witness is saying that the loan occurred on Monday. It's not the same loan, but again, it's the same obligation to the same people for the same amount. So Rav Yishuv Mekarcha says he can put it together, and Rav saying that the halach falls like Rav Yishuv Mekarcha even by metatlan as well. Ula Amar, So Ula says no. By karka, I totally hear how you could take the two testimonies and put them together like we just described. Because again, it's the same property that they're testifying about. And it was just an admission on two different days. But not by loans. By loans, he says, I can't subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, where two witnesses are testifying about the loan, but they're testifying that the loan occurred on two different days. Amalei Abay Halacha Mechalal DePligi. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. You're saying that the halacha falls like Rav Yeshua ben Karcha when it comes to property, as if to say that someone argued with Rav Yeshua ben Karcha on such a scenario. V'amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Modim Chacham leRav Yeshua ben Karcha beidus karka. But meanwhile, we have a Masorah given to us by Rav that the Chachamim agreed to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha in the case of property. Vitzini Rav Yidi Bar Avin ben Ezika de Bei Karna. Now, when Karna taught his Nezikin, meaning he had a yeshiva and he was teaching Nezikin in his yeshiva, so he said, "Modim Chacham le Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, Beidus Bechor, Beidus Karka, Beidus Chazaka, Vechein Shebebeinu Shebebas." Meaning, there are four areas in halacha where there is no debate. The Chachamim agree to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, even though the Edom are coming at two different times and testifying at two different times about two different events. We could take the testimony and put them together. So let's go through these four halachas very quickly. Number one is Bechor. The halacha by Bechor is that if a Bechor has a mum, so then the Bechor can be shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously, Bizmanah Gemar, there was no Beis HaMikdash, so you'd only be allowed to eat the Bechor only when there was a mum. And if I have witnesses who testify about a blemish in a Bechor, and let's say the two different witnesses are testifying about two different blemishes, but I could take the two testimonies and put them together. Even though they're testifying about two different blemishes, but they're testifying about the same animal, and the common denominator of the two testimonies is that the animal is a Baal Mum, and therefore can be shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. Edus Karka, like we just described, where the witnesses are testifying about an admission that somebody owes property to somebody else. So even though the admission was, the two testimonies were about an admission on two different days, but it's the same property, and therefore I could take the two testimonies and put them together. Edus Chazaka, where normally you have two witnesses testifying that in this 3-year period of time, this person has been sitting on the property, and therefore is the owner of the property. In this case, one witness is describing a 3-year period of time. A second witness is describing another 3-year period of time. So again, I could take these two testimonies and put them together, even though it's not describing the same period of time. But still, collectively, they are both telling me that for 3 years, he lived on this land, even though it's not the same 3 years. Obviously, it only works if there is a 6-year window in which this testimony can work. And finally, that of a boy and a girl. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to discuss that later. So the Gemara says, so what do we see over here? So Abaye said that the... So Ula was of the opinion that the halacha falls like Rav Yeshua ben Karcha when it comes to karka, given the implication that the Chachamim argue with Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. And the Gemara is just simply, the Gemara right now is objecting to that because we have a tradition that came to us through Rav Yidi Bar Avin that the Chachamim don't argue when you have karka. The Chachamim and Rav Yeshua ben Karcha do not argue with one another when it comes to karka and three other areas of halacha. Gemara says, Gavra Gavra Karamis, Marsavra Pligi, Marsavra Lo Pligi. But the Gemara just simply dismisses the whole discussion because the Gemara says, look, when all said and done, Rav Yidi Bar Avin says they don't argue. Ula could be of the opinion they do argue. And the Gemara says, then look, we could just simply say they argue. Okay, let's finish up today just with the discussion of the fourth example. Meaning, according to Rav Yidi Bar Avin, there are four examples in halacha where, even though the witnesses are not testifying about the exact same thing, but basically we could take the two testimonies and put them together. And not only would Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha subscribe to that viewpoint, the Chachamim would agree to that as well. The four examples are, again, Edus of the Bechor, property, an admission that property belongs to somebody else, the three-year period in which a person is living on the land, and finally a son, a boy and a girl. The Gemara did not explain what that last one was, and the Gemara now is going to spend just a couple moments explaining. So the Gemara says, "My v'chein shebebeinu shebebas ilema echad amar echas begaba ve'echad amar echad bekresa." In order for either a boy or girl to have arrived to the point of godless, so there needs to be both they need to matriculate a number of years, and they also have to have physical simanim, physical signs of maturation, which are pubic hairs. And specifically, the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim is they have to have two in the genital area. So the Gemara goes on to say that one witness, Echad Omer Acha Bekresa, Echad Omer Acha Begaba, Echad Omer Acha Bekresa. So the two witnesses are testifying, obviously this is very delicate, but the two witnesses are testifying to the fact that they saw Shnei Sa'aros, but on two different parts of the genital area. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, yeah, but if each one is only testifying to one hair, that's not only disparate testimonies, but the truth of the matter is what they're testifying about is not a full testimony. Meaning, in all the previous cases where there was testimony about an admission of owing money, an admission of owing land, an admission that I saw a blemish on an animal, in all those examples, what each one is testifying in of itself is valid testimony, complete testimony. But in our case over here, when each witness is only testifying about one hair, each witness is not even testifying about an entire entity. Meaning, in order to establish adulthood, each witness has to see two hairs. So the Gemara says, "Ela echad amar shlaim begaba, echad amar shlaim bekresa." So the Gemara says, "Okay, you're right. The case must be where each witness was witnessing actually two hairs. One was witnessing on one side of the area, and the other one was witnessing on the other side of the area. So now each witness is actually testifying to an entire event, and then, even though it was on two different areas of the region, but still you can take the two testimonies and put them together in order to establish adulthood." Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, I'll pick it up with the words Amar Rav Yosef right in the middle of the Amar.